You ain't touching me unless
this song is Bodak Consent. It is a parody, of course, based on Cardi B's Bodak Yellow. I love it. The video is online as of today. This is, you know what? This is so wonderful. And we are in the midst, especially here in Ontario, of a time when we really need to talk about sex in a way with young people that is not being addressed. And I love so much about this song and this video. So let's dive into it. Please welcome to the show Shira Taylor and Roxanne Ma. Hello.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
And so individually, tell us what your involvement is with the song and the video.
Sure. So my name's Shira Taylor. I'm the creator and director of SEXT, which stands for Sex Education by Theater. And we produced this music video to show what the youth voice is capable of when youth are invited to take charge of their own sex education.
And my name is Roxanne Ma, and I am the Manager of National Awareness Programs at the Canadian Foundation for AIDS Research, also known as CANFAR. And we recently partnered with Shira and her group Sex Education by Theater, on this music video and as well on a National High Schools tour earlier this year in the spring. You know, Sex is a great community partnership as part of our National Youth Awareness Programs that focus on HIV education and prevention.
It's such a wonderful, I think part of the problem we have, especially around subjects like sex, is that adults sometimes don't speak in a language that young people understand or want to listen to. And this song, I mean, it's great. This is a parody of an already hit song. But it's also talking about and addressing some issues that a lot of adults have never dealt with. So there's a great line in there about, like, if I send him a picture, he knows it's just for him. That's the old lady way of saying it. It's rappier in the song. Thanks. But
you have mad skills.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for recognizing. So it's, you know, when I was in high school, and you know, my best friend's kid is in high school, and some of the things that she has to deal with, I'm like, technology is a nightmare. This is a nightmare. And I don't know a better way to address those things than by getting the people living it in the conversation. Tell us how SEXT started, Shira.
Sure. So SEXT started as my PhD thesis. I'm doing my PhD in public health at the Dalhousie School of Public Health at the University of Toronto. And I really wanted to create a program that put youth from a community where talking about sex is cultural taboo center stage. Mm. And I was really interested in the view of culture as actually enriching the conversation about sexual health versus as a barrier to sexual health conversations, which is how it's often portrayed. So I went into the Thorncliffe-Flemingdon Park community, which is a newcomer community in Toronto with a majority South Asian Muslim population. And I walked into the school with this idea where I would make a play with the youth where we could sing and dance about chlamydia and homophobia, which some people might be a little skeptical of at first.
I'd watch that play.
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'll get tickets for that for sure.
Yeah. And now thousands of youth have as well.
Yeah. Yes. So I went into the school and I actually said, the first thing I asked, I was talking to teachers, but I said, I really want to talk to a student. And a young boy, they called him down because he was kind of the class troublemaker. And I'm like, that's who I want to talk to. Mm-hmm. And he looked a little afraid. He thought he was getting in trouble for something. But I pitched this idea to him. And his response was that this sounds really cool, but no girl in this community will ever talk to you about sex. Because it's a really religious community. And these conversations aren't necessarily happening out in the open. So I said, I thanked him very much. And I said, I'm not going to take your word for it. And I immediately asked to speak to a girl's gym class. And I went into the girls' gym class, and I was about 2 seconds into my pitch, and one girl shot up her hand. She actually was on our national tour with us 4 years later. And the youth in the community were so excited, because there was also a lot of gaps in arts programming. So a lot of these youth had really strong passion for dance and rap and singing and spoken word, and there weren't that many opportunities happening in the community. So based on that, I was pulling scrap papers out of my purse so youth could give me their contact information. And then I came back and created this play with this group of youth. And these aren't youth who are necessarily interested in pursuing theaters. Some of them now have gone on to post-secondary in engineering, computer science, business. So these are just youth who really cared about the issues. And then through the program, we were able to nurture them, bring in local artists, develop their skills, and help really magnify their voice. And thanks to CanFar now, their voice is reaching so many more youth at such a crucial time.
Why do you think it's important? Because this is actually an amazing idea, because sometimes to get a message across, to have it in an art setting makes it so much easier for people to learn and to enjoy, because the message is coming in such a sort of in like in an entertainment. Why do you think it's very important for this conversation to be had, especially by younger people?
Absolutely. So on our national tour that we just went to throughout Ontario and northern Saskatchewan, the kinds of questions that we get from youth in the audience are, this boy in my class keeps asking me to send him nudes. Do I have to send him nudes? Or, these are real questions.
My heart just broke. Sorry, that's why I was like, you don't have to. Also, never with your face.
That's a really good point, right? What you said just there is a harm reduction approach, right? Mm-hmm. So we have two choices. We could pretend that this stuff isn't happening, or we can accept that it is happening and give youth the tools to make healthy decisions and protect themselves, right? And what's neat about theater is that theater gives people the chance to embody these precarious situations in a safe space. So that's how we develop the choreography you see in the video. So you see, when you get someone sexts you something, what do you do? Do you send it to your friends, or do you push them away? If someone's grinding up against you and you don't want them to, how do you react? How do your friends react? How do bystanders react, right? Mm-hmm. And this is really visual, and these are people who look like kids in Toronto in 2018, and they listen to the same music, and they're dancing, they have the same dance moves, right? And they're the ones who are getting the message across. So I think it makes it much more powerful.
I went to theater school at Concordia when I was slightly younger. I'm very young, but slightly younger. And it's interesting. There was a class.
How young?
I'm very young now, but I was younger than.
Like a baby.
But, basically I went to university when I was a fetus.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because there was a course that everyone had to take and some people specialized in, which was called Drama for Human Development. And if you were like me and you were in the performance category, you're like, this is drama for losers. But it was basically about kind of using theater to change the world. And we all thought it was like a ridiculously lofty goal. And it's interesting because sitting here talking to you, I'm like, oh, this is the embodiment of what I was refusing to listen to, essentially, right? And it makes me realize, like, this, what a wonderful way. Because it's easier, sometimes it's hard for me to tell my story, but if I'm just telling you a story, that can be different. I can tell my secrets but hide them as just a narrative I'm making up. Or, you know, we're creating it as a group. And so I think this is such a beautiful example. And I love that, you know, I was one of those kids who was in all the arts programs, and then every year when budgets got cut, one of my programs got cut, and I was treated as expendable. And so the idea that you're then offering an outlet to some of these kids too, and I'm sure some of them don't care about theater, but some of them probably do, this is really fabulous. And so at what point, Roxanne, did CanFar get involved, and why is it important for you guys to support these kinds of ventures?
So I actually met Shira at a youth sexual health symposium in March of this year. And so when I saw them perform, I immediately knew that this was, you know, an amazing initiative. Here we are looking at, you know, these youth of color who are being represented in theater and who are demonstrating these realities and taking center stage in utilizing their voices to talk about these really important topics related to their own health and well-being. And when I saw the show, I was like, I need to send them into high schools across the country. And so I approached Shira, and, you know, so the program that I manage at CanFar, it's a national youth awareness program that focuses on HIV education and really targeting communities that are disproportionately affected by HIV in Canada. And really also wanting to use arts-based mediums as a tool to engage youth in a safe space to talk about their own sexual health and well-being, and leading the conversation into HIV prevention. And so, you know, sex was a perfect embodiment of a peer-to-peer and a youth-led initiative, where the youth's realities are really reflected, and also being showcased by young people themselves. And so we partnered, and we sent them into high schools in over 39 communities and Indigenous reserves across northern Saskatchewan, northern Ontario, and the greater Toronto area. And, you know, I envision that this partnership will hopefully take place and grow into other regions across Canada as well.
That's amazing. Could you just, if you don't mind, just go back a little bit. For those who are listening, I might not know, talk a little bit about what CONFIDA does and, like, the mandate and why it's necessary as an organization.
Absolutely. So CANFAR, the Canadian Foundation for AIDS Research, has been around for 30 years. And so as we're entering, you know, into the third decade of our foundation, but also the third decade of HIV and this disease being, you know, in the global landscape, CANFAR is really looking to be a leader in HIV prevention and reducing new infections in Canada. And so CANFAR's mandate is to raise funds for HIV and AIDS research in Canada, but also to raise awareness. And so awareness, HIV awareness and education is becoming increasingly important in our platform. And CANFAR believes that prevention is a critical strategy in reducing new infections and in order to end HIV in Canada. And so our educational initiatives have recently expanded in the past 2 years, thanks to a generous gift from the Slate Family Foundation, which has allowed us to expand our youth awareness work and actually partner with community organizations such as SEXT to really reach youth affected in different at-risk communities.
One thing that I've talked before with people who work with nonprofits, and especially when it comes to disease, is that it can be difficult because there, for lack of a better word, there's trends with disease, right? And in the 90s, and, you know, AIDS was the one that everyone was kind of finally paying attention to, and kind of it was the red ribbon was the ribbon everybody was wearing, and, you know, now we're more into a cancer phase. Is it challenging sort of keeping the focus, or keeping that education level up for HIV and AIDS? And what is still the most commonly held misconception that you guys are fighting against?
So I totally agree, Allison. There's definitely, I would say, almost phases and waves within, you know, the disease and the health sector. And so, you know, what we're finding is actually HIV rates in Canada are still increasing. And so, and they're also increasing disproportionately in different communities. And so a quarter of new HIV infections in Canada are actually amongst young people between the ages of 15 and 29. And so, you know, we see that Indigenous communities, people who use injection drugs are disproportionately affected. Young gay men are disproportionately affected by the disease. And so I think there is a lot of opportunity and relevancy, you know, in 2018 and this point in time to continue the efforts to educate young people at an earlier stage where we can really be preventing HIV infection through education and through really relevant means. So, you know, using arts-based mediums, using pop culture references is one way to really engage youth in a way that is relevant to their experiences and realities.
It's something that, unfortunately, we still are a little bit puritanical in North America, and we don't want to talk about sex openly in the majority of cases. And as, you know, as we are seeing here in Ontario, we also don't want to change the way we talk about it. How have you guys felt about the fact that we're kind of reverting back to an old curriculum? Has that placed kind of new, has that lit a fire for you guys? Are you a little bit worried about your own work going forward and the fact that we seem to be regressing a little bit?
Mm-hmm. So when having this conversation, I'm always trying to stay away from the us versus them narrative that really happens with this debate.
Okay.
Because I think it's important to recognize that at the end of the day, everyone is trying to, quote, protect the youth, right? Mm. I think everyone who's at the table in this discussion is coming from a place of care. As a researcher and someone who also does grassroots work in the field, I do feel a responsibility to enlighten and educate on what's actually going on. And, I mean, the research is very clear. Talking about sex and giving youth the tools to protect themselves does not make kids have more sex. It just doesn't. The research is clear. Our program specifically, like the research from the pilot, showed improvements in the sexual health self-efficacy and the personal and social development of the youth who are involved in the program. So what we're finding is that approaches to sex ed that are extremely open, non-judgmental, comprehensive, engaging, actually fun. Why I like theater is it engages youth intellectually and emotionally, which is found to lead to concrete behavior change. So the research is clear that this approach to sex ed works. And I think when a lot of parents hear the questions like I was sharing, like, I'm 12 and my boyfriend's 14 and he's forcing me to have sex, do I have to have sex with him? That really protecting the youth is giving them the answers to those questions and showing them how to navigate those experiences.
No, I completely agree with you. As someone who grew up in the 90s in sub-Saharan Africa, in a time when especially sex education was nothing. You didn't even have that option. And HIV and AIDS was running rampant through so many different communities. It got to a point where parents and teachers had to understand that pretending it's not happening was so much worse than actually try and have these conversations with us, the young people were doing. And they ended up doing all these programs on both, like you said, grassroots, like community levels, but also on national, like, levels, and doing like TV commercials and radio commercials, trying to tell young people, like, this is what you need to know about but also it's sexual health in general. And the numbers between when those programs started and like 5, 6, 7, 10 years later were drastically, like, the numbers of infection drastically declined, because people now had the option of learning what the dangers were. Mm. As opposed to sort of just sitting there and being like, we're just going to put your head in the sand and hope for the sort of for the best.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And the other thing that we're seeing is, which has been our narrative since we started, is usually the sex ed debate, like you said, it's adults, it's teachers, it's politicians, it's parents debating each other. The youth voice has been really absent. And what's exciting right now is we saw 40,000 youth in Ontario walk out of class.
Yeah.
And I think there's a shift, like we saw it with the survivors of the Douglas shooting in the States, where the youth really stepped up and people are actually listening now. So that's been what we've been preaching for the last 4 years, but there is kind of an exciting shift now. I was noticing in the media coverage of the walkout, people were listening to what the teens had to say, and they're the experts on their own lives. They know what they need.
And that's true, because like you said, the things that they have to deal with now, a lot of them, previous generations didn't even think about it.
We have something no reference point.
Something like cyberbullying, we have no idea what
exactly.
That is. We have no reference point for that. I mean, yeah, now as adults we also do it, but
sure.
Even then,
but
the pressures are different.
We've never, look, high school was a really stressful time for me, and I did it without the online component of it, right? And so now when I look at some of the things, we've never been in it, and I think for a long time, we felt like, you know, throughout civilization, we felt like adults passed down the wisdom and kids shut up and listen. But now we're at a point where we literally have no idea
right.
What their life is. And we can pretend I was young once. Not in this era, you weren't. And so we have to listen to them and we have to start going, well, what is that like? And because even, yeah, I'm an adult and there are so many people that I block and unfollow because I'm like, you're mean. And you're a stranger, but you know what I mean? We have, a different experience with it where it's like, if I have to live without Facebook, guess what? I used to do it. I could do it again. Whereas kids now, they're like, ew, who's on Facebook? They're on social media sites I don't even know about.
Right.
And it's to incorporate their input. Like, we have to stop thinking that we know what's best, because in this case, we don't even know what we're talking about. What's going on with that PhD? You got that now?
My favorite question. You and my mother can start a club.
Oh, listen, if you never get it, I'm still so proud of you. Yeah.
I'm on the home stretch. If my supervisor's listening, I'm on the home stretch. I tend to get distracted by these exciting opportunities and to actually be out in the world.
I haven't been helping.
Yeah. Roxanne has also not been helping.
I feel like they should just give it to you at this point, though. I mean,
listening to that.
I never got my undergrad, so I also don't know what the process is. But
and again, if your supervisor is listening, they're like, well, I know what that means. I know exactly what that means. But I wanted to ask, just to go back a little bit about the program, like, because you're dealing with obviously very young minds who are coming from very different backgrounds, economically and socially and all these things. And you're also dealing with so many different issues, not just sexual health, but you're dealing with real life situations and conversations that even as adults we're having a difficult problem having. Things like consent and domestic violence and stuff like that. How do you incorporate all of that and try and keep it, for lack of a better term, not too overwhelming for them?
Great question. I mean, we don't shy away from the hard topics, but we do it in a really specific way. So the space that we try and create, it's that youth are welcome to share their experiences, and they never have to. And what we're finding is sometimes in a workshop, the distance that theater affords really helps, right? Because I could play a character who's going through something like this, right? And I can keep that distance. We also have examples. Like, we have another music video coming out soon based on one student's experience with domestic violence. And eventually, in this space, she felt safe enough to share her experience and really express it through art. And when we were touring Saskatchewan, we had a little girl in grade 6 come up to us and say to this girl, she said, you know, I can tell you've struggled because I struggle too, but I think it's so brave that you put your struggle into art. And that was a girl in grade 6 who said that. Aww. So sometimes I find when you create the safe space, and we have fun together, we do a lot of work around making it a really safe and open space, then people do feel comfortable sharing. And we also talk about the fact that this might be different from what they're learning at home. And I'm always saying, like, you know, take what I say with a grain of salt, take what your parents say with a grain of salt, take what the media says with a grain of salt. It's really about creating critical thinkers who can make their own choices about their identity. And it's not to go against what they're learning at home, right? It's just showing them different perspectives, because in our view, good sex ed is a space where different and often conflicting views and values can all coexist together. It's just about creating that mutual respect and acceptance of difference.
And I think one thing that becomes a byproduct of that I think is really important, that a lot of people kind of had to struggle their way into, is everyone, when it comes to sex and intimacy, everyone is going to have a different comfort level. And you get to decide for you what that is. And you don't have to feel bad that it's different than somebody else's. And that kind of attitude certainly was never taught to me. And just that it's however you feel, you get to decide that, and you get to decide where your boundaries are, and no one else gets to decide that for you, right? What's going forward? You have another video coming out. Where is this partnership going to take you guys?
So as I mentioned, we sent Sex on Tour in over 39 high schools, and we intend on doing another tour this upcoming May and June in the spring of the end of the high school year. And we're hoping that the tour will take us into different provinces, into new regions in Canada where HIV rates and sexual health education are really critical pieces for youth to access. And so in In addition to that, Shira and I have also been talking about potentially looking at replicating this kind of model using theater as a method to talk about sexual health education and hopefully replicating it into different communities. And next month, we also hope to come out with a report looking at all of the feedback that we received from teachers and students on our tour this year and to really come out with the results of the impact that we've had.
And Shira, Allison and I haven't been youth for a very long time.
No, I'm very
young.
I'm very young.
Yeah.
I'm a millennial.
But she went to drama school. I've been to at least 2.5 acting classes.
Ooh.
What are our chances if we were trying to appear in one of these videos?
You know, pretty high.
Yeah.
If you're willing to get up there and speak your truth with confidence, then you are more than welcome to join our sexed family.
Oh, nice. We can be the creepy old backup dancers.
Just be backup dancers. I like
this. Yeah. I'm into it. I'll back you guys up. For people listening who want to find out more about what you guys are doing, how can they find out more about sex and about CANFAR?
So in terms of CANFAR, you can visit our website at canfar.com/awareness, and we have youth resources up available online that are tailored to different communities of youth, as well as free resources for any teachers or youth workers, community health workers out there who are looking to have access to free educational resources for their networks of youth.
And for sex, our website is sexeducationbytheater.com. And our handle for all the social medias is at SextEdShow, SextEdShow.
That's amazing. I really love this partnership and what you guys are doing. And I think it's going to be so important. And the video is so great. Like the beginning,
Thank you.
The titles coming up on text and all that kind of stuff. It's so wonderful, and I think it's going to reach a lot of people, and it's very, very important. So thank you so much, Roxanne Ma and Shira Taylor, for coming in today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Much.